Good day, everyone, and welcome to the AG and NE IoT and SW IoT's Changes to Subcapacity Licensing Offering Conference Call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Roger Kerr. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Melanie, and welcome everyone to this call. I really appreciate your taking the time out of your busy schedules, especially on such short notice. As Melanie said, my name is Roger Kerr. I'm part of the Software Group Marketing, Planning, and Strategy team, and with a group of folks focusing on distributed processor licensing. That includes Sue Swanson, who manages the Passport Advantage team, John Maurer, who's a member of that Passport Advantage team, Carlos Belak, who manages the Software Group Pricing team for distributed software, Steve Salaveria and Raj Krishnamurthy, who both work for him, and then Jim DeGroot, who represents the Tivoli License Compliance Manager team on this call. All of those folks are here and will be available to help me answer questions a little later. But first, let me just make sure you've all got the charts. If you registered for this session, at the bottom of the confirmation note, the chart should be attached. So make sure you scroll down all the way to the bottom beyond the international phone numbers, and you should see the attachment for that note or for that file. If you did not register for the event, that's fine. We certainly sent out the numbers so that you could join in whatever way was easiest. So I'm going to walk you through how to get to the charts. You need to ultimately get to the subcapacity licensing webpage on Passport Advantage, but given the high-quality IBM search, there's no way to get there directly. So you want to go to the Software Group Extreme Leverage site. That's the Excel site. And for those of you who don't have that bookmarked, that's w3.ibm.com/software/XL. Excel standing for Extreme Leverage. Again, that's w3.ibm.com/software/XL. When you get to that page, on the right-hand side of the page, you're going to see a sort of box that says Tools and Resources. In the drop-down, you will find Passport Advantage. Select Passport Advantage and then click on Go. That will take you to the Passport Advantage internal homepage on Excel. And you'll see just down a little bit from the top, there is a news section, important new news. And you'll see that yesterday we announced some price slope changes, and right below that will be the link to the subcapacity page, and it, the entry will say suspension of subcapacity terms. When you get to the subcapacity website page, scroll down about halfway, you'll see some detail on the suspension, and there are two files associated with it immediately below that. One is a Q&A, and then the other are the charts for this call. So again, real quickly, go to the Extreme Leverage homepage at w3.ibm.com/software/XL. Select on the right under Tools and Resources, Passport Advantage, and click on Go. Then go to the News section. The second item is for the suspension of subcapacity terms. That'll take you to a page, and about halfway down that page are the charts for this call. And by the way, following this call, the MP3 file of both this call and the one we are holding for our Asian compatriots in about 10 hours will be placed on that as soon as we get the files from the vendor. So we're here to talk about some suspension of subcapacity terms, and I recognize that not all of you will be intimately familiar with the subcapacity offering. So we've had this offering available as a standard offering in the marketplace for about 2 years. And we've used it as a learning experience. We put it out in a way that we thought would help prepare us and would help prepare customers for the fairly radical changes that are coming over the now close-in years as we get increasingly multi-core chips and as customers virtualize their systems. And we tried to be flexible with this, learning as we go, recognizing that we probably weren't going to get everything right the first time. So in the 2 years, we've gone through a number of releases of the Tivoli License Compliance Manager, which we use to help track the tools. But as we've done this, we've begun receiving feedback that we need to tweak the offering a little bit more, especially for those customers who have very complex installations, because it can be difficult to set up the tool and to be able to report the licenses. And we became concerned that we were going to impact the image of the Tivoli License Compliance Manager tool. There is a full function, 4-fee version available in the marketplace. And we're using it sort of as an added function in the free version that we have available, and we were very concerned we were going to impact the image of the for-fee version with customers. In fact, it's a really important tool for customers to use to do software asset management, which will become increasingly important in the coming years. So for both the customer reasons and the fact we didn't want to impact the image of the tool, we're going to suspend some of these terms. But first, let me take you through the agenda for the call. On page 2, first we're going to overview what subcapacity licensing is, talk a little bit about the value proposition and why we think it's such a good approach for customers, especially as they increasingly adopt the virtualization technologies. We'll go through some of the customer concerns we've encountered with the existing process as it has been up until this suspension. Then we'll talk about the terms that were suspended, that are suspended, and we'll talk about then how we're communicating this to customers, and we're going to need your help there. I'll explain what and why a little more detail then, but we want to make sure all the customers get those get the news of this, because in fact we're just hitting the point where customers would be reporting if they were, you know, completely installed and ready to go. And of course, we want to save that effort. It's kind of a meaningless at this point. And then we'll point you to some resources, both to look up additional information and to be able to ask questions should they arise. So if you move with me to slide 3, let's start by defining what subcapacity is. And the place I want to start is reemphasizing something that all of us who are hosting this call said many times last summer when we began the education on the processor value units. IBM licenses today and has always licensed using a per-processor methodology to the processor core. The rest of the industry changed the definition of processor a couple years ago, but in fact we have been consistently holding to the definition of a processor core since we moved to per-processor licensing. And we need to be very, very confident of this as we go talk to customers. Many customers have shifted along with AMD or Intel or Microsoft to a different definition for a processor, but we continue to define it as a processor core. So when we take a look at the licensing terms we use when you do per processor, which is now changed to processor value units, historically, our licensing terms said that a customer had to have enough software entitlements for every processor core on the server where they were running a particular workload. Didn't matter whether the workload was running on that processor core or not, just the fact that the product was running there, they were required to have licenses for every processor core. And we've called that full capacity. So you can see a picture of that on the left-hand side of this slide. And you can see that there's essentially two different partitions there, one blue and one green, or green, one red. Even if you were just running a product in the blue partition, under full capacity, you would still be required to have 6 license entitlements, even though the product was only running on 3 of those processor cores. So 2 years ago then, we announced the subcapacity licensing offering, which said, in the kinds of situations we were just talking about, where you're in that blue partition, products there would only have to have enough license entitlements for the processor cores in that partition. So in this case, it would only require 3 entitlements for 3 processor cores, obviously saving the customer half the cost of the licenses versus the full capacity offering in this particular example. Now, it is true that that's only applicable to the software in our portfolio that used to use the per processor or now uses the processor value unit metrics. It does not apply to anything using per user or some of the other metrics that we have for small portions of our portfolio. And it also does require supported partitioning technologies, which we'll talk a little bit more about on the next page. One other thing I want to make sure that you're all aware of is customers may come and ask you a question about active or activated processor cores. You'll find that many hardware vendors, including our brethren in STG, can ship a processor, and for argument's sake, let's say it has 12 processors physically on the box, but they've only turned 6 on. The other 6 are inactive. And in fact, even though there are 12 processor cores physically on that server, it really looks like the picture on this slide. To a customer, there's only 6 processor cores. So if the customer asks you about active or inactive processor cores, we only care from a software licensing point of view about the active cores. Of course, if at some time in the future the customer activates additional cores, they need to acquire the appropriate software entitlements for those cores at that time, but they're not required to have licenses for inactive cores until they are activated. So with that brief overview of what subcapacity is, let's move to slide 4 and talk about what the subcapacity offering was when it was originally announced and what the full set of features would be, of which we're going to suspend 3 of them here with this call today. So subcapacity licensing is available for selected software group products, and that's primarily in the DB2 and WebSphere families. But you've also got the Commerce and Portal, which grant, and as well as MQ. Granted, they have a WebSphere brand, but Commerce, MQ, and Portal are in there. We also have some Workplace, Omnifine, Informix, and TX series products in that as well. And you'll find the complete list of that on that subcapacity page that I pointed you to get these charts. You'll also see, if you have the charts, you'll see a link on this page. That'll take you right there, and it has an up-to-date list of all the software products that are supported under the standard subcapacity offering. And we also support this for only certain partitioning technology. Now, it is a wide range of the partitioning technologies available in the marketplace today, but given that that whole technology is advancing so quickly, we don't necessarily have all of them activated. But certainly, we cover the ones on IBM System P and System I. We cover most of the ones in the Sun Spark and the HP RISC machines. And we also support x86 processors, understanding that today we are only able to actually license down to the chip, not to the actual processor core. So if it's a dual-core x86, the smallest increment you can license to today is 2 processor cores. And if it's an x86 quad-core chip, the smallest increment would be 4 processor cores. And then I also want to remind you that Linux on Z-Series is also part of the distributed software products. And so Linux running in the appropriate partition, LPAR, on a Z-Series is also included in this offering. Now, you should also be aware that that list is getting extended all the time. It's a much longer list now than it was when we first announced subcapacity 2 years ago. And over time, we expect to see most of the products in our portfolio that license to the processor core offering subcapacity. There are a few that, for good market reasons, we don't want to offer that way. But you'll, over time, see most of them go there. When customers have these products on these partitioning technologies, they need to sign the subcapacity attachment, and we ask them to track their compliance using the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software. Now, there's really 2 versions of this product. There's Tivoli License Compliance Manager, which is the for-fee version, has a very broad set of functions. It's one of the leading software asset management tools in the marketplace. Competes very well with any of the competitive products if your customer's looking for an end-to-end software asset management solution. But for our use in just tracking subcapacity licenses, we didn't think it was appropriate to ask customers to go out and buy an IBM software product. So we asked the Tivoli License Compliance Manager, or what I'll refer to for the most part on the rest of the call as TLCM. We didn't want to ask the TLCM folks to we didn't want to ask customers to install the full TLCM product and pay for a license just to track IBM's middleware. So the Tivoli development team put out a special version of the product called Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software. That is a free version of the product that the customers need to use when tracking subcapacity licenses. The software product is free. They need to provide the server and obviously the installation resources to get it installed. And using that tool, they track the usage on all the servers running subcapacity products, and then quarterly would develop a report. It's a standard report in the tool. They would review it, and once they were comfortable with the data in that tool, they would submit it to IBM. As I mentioned at the beginning of the call, we're just on the period where customers would have been reporting for the first quarter. Now, subcapacity, as you can imagine from the previous chart, has some real benefits to customers, especially as they use these virtualization technologies, meaning they begin to partition the systems. It allows them to, you know, increase the utilization on the servers, which effectively drives their utilization of their software at the same time, so getting a better value out of the software. But it really gives them more flexibility. It says that they no longer have to be as worried about how their software is licensed to be able to figure out how they're going to architect their systems. Instead, they can let their business needs drive the architecture of the systems and let the software licensing just support that. Now, because we've probably had a few folks who've joined the call since the beginning, I want to come back and just, if you don't have the charts as part of your confirmation, I want to walk you through how to get the charts that I'm presenting from. So if you did register, the charts would be in that confirmation note at the very bottom. If you did not register, you go to the Software Group Extreme Leverage website, w3.ibm.com/software/Excel. On the right, there's a section called Tools and Resources. On the drop-down menu there, select Passport Advantage and then select the Go button. That takes you to the home page for Passport Advantage. And in the News section, the second item down is for the suspension of subcapacity terms. Click on that, and about halfway down that page, you will find these charts. And right now, we are just finishing up on slide 4. But one of the things that's really important that for all of us to consider for using subcapacity licensing is that prior to subcapacity, we know that there were sales reps who were offering our products at a discount under the full capacity terms in order to sort of mimic subcapacity. And that was the right thing to do probably when we didn't have an offering. But the advantage of the offering is as the customer grows, since they have a subcapacity license, when the use of that application that uses that product grows, IBM gets more revenue. And that is the right thing to do for the customer. It's the right thing to do for IBM to make sure that they are paying for the value that they are getting. So, again, very important to use the subcapacity to track in any situation where customers are running the product on fewer than the total number of processor cores that are on the server. And we do recognize that with many of you, through the processor value unit training last summer, you became aware of this situation, the fact that there were customers running in partitions and were using full capacity part number products in effectively a subcapacity mode. You should be aware that it is possible to convert those licenses over to subcapacity to get them on the right product number and take advantage of the subcap terms and reduce that risk of any trouble should they happen to be audited. So let's go ahead now and move to slide 5 and just talk a little bit about what the process would look like from the customer's perspective. So the customer, of course, would order the particular product using the subcapacity part number, whether it's a workplace, a DB2, a WebSphere product, and that would trigger an order for the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software. Now, version 2.3 just GA'd in January, so it's possible that if you have a customer with subcap today, they could be on version 2.2. That's still fine. Of course, version 2.3 is the latest. We asked the customers to install that product, so that would be the first step. Then they needed to register with the IBM's License Management System Administration Server and then begin tracking the product usage over time, and at the end of a quarter they would generate a standard report and submit that. What Tivoli License Compliance Manager would do is actually track the usage on those servers by product, and it was tracking what we call the high watermark, meaning the maximum number of processors that were defined for that partition at any point during that quarter, because that is the number of licenses the customer would need to have. We license to the high watermark. And again, I want to emphasize that on this slide you see that third step where they generate and submit the report, and we are currently in that period where customers would begin reporting. So if you have a customer who has subcapacity licenses, when we get to the chart on communications a little later, please make sure you understand what we've done and what you might want to double check to make sure your customer knows that they don't need to take those steps at the moment. And one other thing I want to emphasize again with the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software. You know, we asked the Tivoli team to adapt this version to help us do subcapacity compliance. It has a lot more function than just what we use to track subcapacity compliance. And I think you're going to find that within a few years, given the state of the virtualization technologies that are coming both in hardware and in software in the next few years, your customers are going to find themselves using some fairly advanced virtualization features. And they're not going to be able to track very easily where their software is really running. You could find that applications and the middleware that supports them could be moving dynamically from partition to partition and possibly from machine to machine. And they're going to need a tool. So we encourage you to take a look at the full Tivoli License Compliance Manager when you're in that situation with the customers taking a look at software asset management in its much broader context than just subcapacity compliance. So let's go ahead and move to slide six and take a look at the issues that we've been finding with the subcapacity process. We've had a task force that convened early last fall that's taken an in-depth look at the situation, talking to both customers and to IBM sales teams. In fact, Tivoli helped us by putting together a SWAT team that could get out in some of the customer situations where they seem to be having more problems and really understanding what the root of those problems were so that we could be sure we were addressing the right situations. And what we really found is that, especially for customers with really complex environments, it was just too difficult to be able to define all of the IBM products appropriately to the TLCM tool. And the primary reason for that is on the middle of this page. We sell the same code packaged in a couple different ways. We can sell it obviously as a standalone product. So, for instance, you can go ahead and get a license of DB2, and your customer will, you know, pay for that license. But also, you can buy products where DB2 comes packaged together as a component. And in those situations, there's no explicit price for DB2. But we also don't have an explicit part number or any electronic signature that tells us that this was a component of a bundle and that they don't need a separate fee license for that product. And for customers to break apart the actual installations on their servers as to which was a component and which was a standalone product and therefore which, you know, they didn't need to track the licenses in terms of, you know, a fee license, and which needed a standalone fee license just became very complex for them. And so as a result, you know, that made it difficult to do the reporting. Now, I want to point out that this is not a problem inherent in the Tivoli License Compliance Manager. It's actually just inherent in the way our distributed software packaging has evolved over time. It's the fact that there is no way to tell these things apart unless you've kept very good manual records. So as a result of this complexity, we want to pull back from the offering at the moment until we can simplify it. And let's go to slide seven and take a look at where we think that we can simplify this in the coming months. So we've identified five steps in kind of the end-to-end process, and you'll see two rows beneath it, one which is the current process that I've kind of overviewed up till now. And then what we want to try and do is we improve the subcapacity process using the Tivoli License Compliance Manager tool. So we start off with a step where customer needs to identify which, you know, for any particular installation of a product on the disk or on a server, they need to identify whether that was a product or a component. And then following that, then they need to get the for those that are you know, fee entitlements or fee products, they need to get the entitlement, whether it's the electronic entitlement that they download from IBM's license management system or manually enter one. Then, after installing the Tivoli License Compliance Manager agents on all the appropriate server, it tracks the use of the products and reports that back to the Tivoli License Compliance Manager server. It then accumulates all of this data and, based on the processor type that it's running on, calculates the appropriate number of processor value units. And I should mention that only takes place in the 2.3 version of TLCM, not the 2.2 version. PBUs first were supported in the 2.3 version announced in January. And from there, then, they can generate the report and send it back to IBM. And basically what you see here is that there's three steps that required some manual customer intervention. That's steps 1, 2, and 5. And in all of those, we think we found ways to either simplify or improve the process, because certainly our goal is to try and minimize the impact of this on customers so that they can easily be in compliance and we can be assured of that without really disturbing their ongoing operations to any great degree. So let's go ahead and move to slide 8, where we're going to take the next few months to really make sure we've dotted the I's and crossed the T's on how we're going to do this simplification. In the meantime, we're going to go ahead and suspend the three requirements which have caused the customers the most difficulty, again, because of some heritage problems with IBM, but customers are seeing it through the TLCM for IBM software tool. So we are temporarily suspending, and again, I want to emphasize the word temporarily, especially for those of you for whom English may not be a primary language, implied in the word suspending is the concept that it's just a temporary thing. Customers will not have to install Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software. Although, again, if you've sold your customer the full for-fee version of TLCM, has wonderful benefits for the customer. They can do that without any of the problems I'm talking about here. They just would not have to use it for subcapacity compliance in the meantime. So they should continue on that path if that's what they're on. But so they don't have to install the TLCM for IBM software program. They don't have to register on IBM's license management system or LMS system. And they don't have to submit their usage reports quarterly to that LMS system. Now, just because we suspended these requirements does not mean that customers don't have to remain in compliance with our terms and conditions. They certainly still need to try their best to do that. We want them to stay in compliance. We recognize without the tool it could be a little more difficult to do that, but fundamentally it is a customer responsibility that we were providing the tool to assist them in doing, and they need to still continue to make every effort to remain in compliance with our licensing terms and conditions, whether they're using full cap products or the subcap products we were tracking with TLCM. So again, what we're doing is just suspending those three terms of the subcapacity license agreement. And so for the time being, they will not have to install TLCM for IBM software. They won't have to register their TLCM administration server with IBM's LMS system. And they won't have to report the usage reports quarterly. So let's go ahead now and move to slide 9 and talk about how we're communicating this information to the customers. Now, for customers who have already enrolled, or rather registered, on IBM's LMS system, we know the emails for those folks through their Passport Advantage registration, and we have sent them a letter, and you'll see the letter text is attached on this chart. You can click on that Adobe Acrobat document icon. It will bring up the text of the letter itself. That is the English version. Should you need the letter in another language, you will see on the last page of this presentation an email address that you can send a note to. And if it's one of the standard languages that we translate these things into, we can make that available to you. Now, for folks that had not got to the point of registering, we would still have some email information from their Passport Advantage registration. And we use those emails to send this letter to. For anyone who has ordered a subcapacity license product who have not yet got to the point of registering with the license management server. But you need to be aware that those people may not be the ones in your customer shop who are in charge of the subcapacity licenses. So that's where we need your help. We need your help to make sure that those people responsible for reporting the subcapacity usage in your customers get notified of this suspension of the three terms. In addition to this letter that we sent out via email, we also have updated the external subcapacity website, which is available on Passport Advantage, and you'll see there's a hot link here on this slide to take you there. And as new customers sign up for subcapacity products, even though these terms are still in the agreement, the Passport Advantage agreement that they have to sign, we will notify them of the suspension of terms so that they don't need to worry about these until we announce the reinstatement of the terms later this year. And in fact, we intended to reinstate those most likely in the third quarter, but as I mentioned, we haven't quite got all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed, so it's possible it may take until the end of the year. But we will certainly do it this year. We are trying our hardest, again, to get that done in the third quarter timeframe. But you'll just have to continue to watch the subcapacity website space and, of course, the various newsletters that you may have heard about this call for information on when we reannounce the subcapacity terms again. So if you move with me to slide 10, it lists the various resources. One at the top is that external subcapacity website page we were just talking about on the previous page. It clearly identifies three terms that are suspended there. In fact, we've already had some feedback from customers that there are customers who have seen that and have recognized that those terms have been suspended. In addition, the internal subcapacity page on Passport Advantage, the one that you potentially got these charts from, has also been updated with information about it. It still contains the overall subcapacity value proposition and description, but we've noted which of those terms have temporarily been suspended, along with some more information on the suspension. In addition, it contains this presentation. It will contain the MP3 file of this call and also the call that we're going to hold for AP later today. Or early tomorrow, their time, actually, will contain both of those MP3s. There is a Q&A as well as the customer letter itself that that was attached to this presentation. Now, if you have questions following this call, on the last page, page 11, obviously the first place to go is the normal support organization that you use for your software question, whether that's TechLine or e-customer care or your Passport Advantage consultant or coordinator, and you should continue to go to those folks with questions. But also, if you're unable to get your question answered, you can send a note to the subcapacity email ID. Both the notes version and the internet version are located here on slide 11. Again, one more time for people who may have joined the call a little bit late, let me walk you through how to get the charts. If you did not register, so you did not get them in your confirmation note, go to the Extreme Leverage homepage at w3.ibm.com/software/Excel. On the right, you'll see a box called Tools and Resources. Select Passport Advantage from the drop-down menu and then hit Go. That will bring up the Passport Advantage homepage in their news section. The second item down, at least the second item as of today, is the suspension of the subcapacity terms. When you go to that page, these charts are about halfway down that page. And let me, just before we open it up for questions, let me ask any of the folks who are supporting me here on the call, Sue, John, Steve, Carlos, Roger, Jim, if there's anything any of you want to add at this point that I might have missed. And since no one's jumping in, I'm going to suspect that that's reasonably good. So at this point, we're going to ask Melanie to open it up for questions and answers, and we'll do our best to answer any questions you have now. In addition, we'll be using these questions to potentially update the Q&A document that we put on the website so that the right information can be communicated out most effectively to all of your peers. So, Melanie, if you'd open the lines now, please.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Please keep in mind, if you are using a speakerphone, to make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just one moment. We'll take our first question from Kiernan Snedeker.
Hi, this is Karen Nusnack. I'm with TechLine. And first I want to say I think it's wonderful that we're doing this. It's been difficult to try and get the sales teams and the customers to be enthusiastic about subcapacity. But if a simple, if you know, we pull off the simplification, I think it'll be a much better world. But I do have a question. When we do announce the new things, you're going to do a big announcement, and then at some point after that, the customers are going to have to start doing the reporting again. What kind of window are we going to give the customers before they have to start sending them the new and improved reports?
Raj, do you want to go ahead and take that?
Yeah, sure, Roger. Hi, Karen, and thanks. That's a very good question. Right now, what we're considering is a 90-day period, but you know we'll evaluate it as we announce the enhancements, and based on the timing of that, we want to make sure that customers are not impacted with you know, quarter closes and things of that sort. So, but right now, we're thinking of a 90-day time period. Okay?
Thanks.
Next, we'll hear from Matt Schneider.
Good morning. Tomorrow morning, I have a first customer meeting with a customer that's been doing subcap for years on the mainframe, but they want to start doing subcap on distributed systems. And I was looking at the Passport Advantage attachment. Is that going to be modified, or is that just on hold, and we can still order the subcap part numbers without having that PA attachment in place?
John Maurer, you want to take that, please?
Sure. That's another good question. The we have no plans to remove the requirement for the subcapacity attachment at this point, except for new customers that new enroll now and use the existing subcapacity attachment. Obviously, we'll need to tell them that those three items have been temporarily suspended.
Okay. So.
As we go down, through the year, we will need to look at potentially modifying the attachment.
Okay. So I'll have them sign the agreement, but verbally share those three requirements are temporarily suspended.
Absolutely.
Okay. Don't forget that we will supply them a copy of the letter also, so that they know in writing that those have been suspended temporarily.
Okay. And then the other question I have is, they have a very specific question about virtual processors, and I think their perception is different than ours. And what is my best bet on getting an answer before 10 a.m. tomorrow? Should I go to that subcap@us.ibm.com email, or is there a specific person?
That would be fine. If you send it that ID, all of us here are alerted that it's coming. We'll make sure that somebody takes a look at it.
Great. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Next, we'll go to Nick Perillo.
Hi. The timing of this is unbelievable because today at 1 o'clock I have a meeting with my customer to kick off the Tivoli Quick Start services to implement the ITLCM. So my question is, what do I do at 1 o'clock when I go over there? Tell them not to move forward with this engagement?
That is a good question. I would say if you're doing it only to support the subcapacity offering, I would tell them to hold off.
I mean, look, I would explain that, what we just described, what Roger described.
Sure.
That we understand from other customer experiences that, the setup, and the entire process, and the requirements that we have in the process are difficult. And so we're suspending the requirement. If you want to go and experiment with it, you can. You're free to do that. There's nothing holding you back from doing that. But it's not required until such time that later this year.
Yeah. Maybe I have to ask it to the services folks, but I'm assuming we can say, hey, we'll honor this services engagement in the future.
That makes logical sense, but I can't speak for the services managers. None of us are part of that organization.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to add in here is this agency, this happens to be the state of New York, and they have a governing agency called the Office for Technology. They host the systems for multiple agencies. Each agency has their own customer number, but they're going to be setting up an infrastructure, their desire is to set up an infrastructure where they're doing the monitoring of multiple customer systems. through one shared server. Is that going to be a capability to be addressed in the future product? That's definitely a requirement here.
How about we take that one? It sounds like a very specific case, and I think we'd want to understand more details to make sure you got the exactly correct answer.
Okay.
You can send us a note to the SubCap ID. We'll set up a time that we can talk and make sure that we understand that fully enough to be able to make sure you're getting the correct answer.
Okay, thank you.
Nick, the one other thing I want to go back on your first point about the Tivoli Quick Start services, you're talking about using the free version, the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software?
Correct.
Okay, just want to make sure, because if it was a full version, I would, there's lots of great function in there and would encourage that one to go on. But if it's just for doing subcapacity, then, yeah, you should hold off on that.
Okay, thank you.
That's, again, like Carlos said, they just want to play around with it, which is their option.
I'll ask him, but it's ironic because the kickoff meeting's at 1 o'clock today.
There's a good reason why we're suspending the requirements is what I would, you know, try.
Sure.
Thanks, Nick. Melanie, next question?
Next, we'll go to Griffin Perro.
Hi, Griffin.
Hi, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love the show. Anyway, listen, how do we find out which clients of ours are already registered and reporting to the LMS?
It's basically figuring out if you've got the right part number, but let me ask either Raj or John if you can jump in, if maybe there's a better way that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I know clients that have the appropriate part number, but just because they have that doesn't mean they're doing it.
It becomes a little more difficult because if they've registered with the LMS server, we can know that. In fact, then you would have probably received a note from us a little bit back. But, I'm not sure what, if, other than knowing they have the part number, I'm not sure of anything more detailed.
Well, so if I had a couple of customers that I knew had the SubCap DB2 part numbers, could I send you a list of them and find out if they are in LMS?
Yeah, we can easily check that. That's a very easy thing to do. But, again, they could still be in the process of doing some of this before registering with LMS, and so you'd still want to inform them that they don't need to install TLCM at this time.
Now, Griffin, just to reiterate what Roger said, right, there is going to be a letter going out to customers, you know, in about, what, 2 weeks, Roger, did you say?
No, I think it's already
it's gone.
It's already gone, right? Yeah. So they may be contacting you, asking you for an explanation, you know, come and see us, whatever. You may want to be proactive, you know, and contact them, right, if you only have a handful of customers, Griffin.
Well, I've got 2,700, which is why I'm asking the question.
No, with SubCap part numbers, I mean.
Yeah, and I don't know how many have SubCap part numbers. I know of a few, and I want to check on those.
Okay.
So who should I send that list to?
You could send it to me. It's rqkerr@us.ibm.com.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Robert Dorijic.
Good evening. About the feedback of our customers. Just today, I got an email from a small customer, a governmental customer, and he gave me the following information. I will read his mail. I have to translate it in English. It's in Flemish. But he says it's very difficult to, it seems to be difficult to install ITLM. And also, he said, we have to install WebSphere, and the ITLM installation needs two processors.
That's correct. It's two processor cores. That's correct.
If you talk about small customers with a few servers and a limited budget, then the two process is in percentage, high percentage of their capacity.
Yeah, I'd like to make two comments about that. First, understand that just because it goes in that server, it doesn't, you know, utilize 100% of those servers. But I understand the concern. And, in fact, that is one of the issues that as we have worked with customers, we have understood. And as we try to simplify the process, we are also working very hard to see what we can do to reduce those requirements. And so we are hopeful but not positive that you'll see some improvement when we reannounce in the second half of the year.
Okay, but something that we have to make clear at the time we put those ITLM installations on track again, I think, yes, indeed.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind sending that concern to the SubCap ID, I mean, we've captured it here, but wouldn't mind getting into a dialogue with you on the specifics of that customer environment.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert.
Next, we'll go to Jennifer Holloway.
Hi. I have a question and then a comment. The first person asked for clarification, and you asked him to send you an email around how we work with virtual servers. But that, to me, is something that we should all benefit from. And so I'm wondering if somebody could comment about, because I thought I had an understanding of, that basically if a customer was using virtual machines like in an Intel environment, we don't count that. So could you comment about that?
Jennifer, we are working on an education module which will describe in much more detail the various virtualization technologies and what we're trying to do and what's, this particular process has held us up a little bit, but what we're trying to do is to get down to say, if you're using VMware on x86, this is specifically what you need to do versus if you were using Solaris on a Spark or if you're using AIX on a System P. So you'll see that education coming out shortly, and if you keep monitoring the Subcapacity website as well as the various newsletters that you were notified of this call, you'll see the information on those calls, which should be coming up in a few weeks to maybe a couple months, somewhere in that range. But we will have much more in-depth education on the various virtualization technologies we support, and beyond that, how you actually work with those specific technologies to determine how many licenses you need.
Okay, that's good. And then I don't know how to say this in the most positive way, but if I think it would behoove IBM if we would incorporate the technology in our software licenses across the board where we have some sort of mechanism to either cap or track the usage so that we don't get into this. I mean, we used to have that in our tools, in Rational, in CATIA, in CADM. We have that technology exists, and why we continue to elect not to utilize it is just a mystery to me, because I think it would simplify things for IBM, it would increase revenue, and it would simplify things for our customers.
I don't think there's anyone who's part of the team here hosting the call that would disagree with you that we'd like to see a much better way to track it, although that requires a fundamental change to the way Software Group does its packaging of all the products. And even if we changed everything that new went out from now on, because customers can run these things for a long time, there's no guarantee that would get out. But actually, we have talked about that. We don't have a good solution to that problem yet, but we haven't given up.
I hope we haven't given up. That's good. Thank you.
As a reminder, that is star one if you would like to ask a question. Next, we'll go to Elvira Barmasier.
Hello, Elvira.
Hi. I've missed the first answer to the first question about the window that it would be applicable to when we start the requirement of subcapacity again. I hear it in 90 days, but also something else, and that I couldn't hear.
Raj, you want to repeat that? Raj, you want to answer that question again?
Yeah, I think the first question was, when we provide the improvements later this year, what time frame would we want the customers to actually start using ITLCM and be in compliance? Now, and so the response that I gave was that we are considering a 90-day period currently, but, we will finalize that, at the time of the announcement of the changes, because we want to make sure the impacts of the customers are minimal. Depending upon when the timing of our changes is announced, we'll make sure that, a proper period is given to them. And also, for individual customers that may have significant implementations, we may need to do something unique for that. So did you hear that? Did you understand?
Okay. Yeah, I understood.
Okay.
And the other question I have is regarding the letter that went out to the customers. Can we have something at the contract level that says that they are suspended? So when we ask for new enrollments of subcapacity terms, that the customer knows by signing that these terms are suspended at least until Q4.
Sure. We are not suspending any of these terms in the actual license agreement itself. However, this letter that goes out with it effectively and legally suspends it for the time being, so that there shouldn't be any concerns about signing the agreement that contains those terms. And we need that signed for the future when they're reinstated. But that letter that goes along with it makes it clear that they are currently suspended.
And the letter is available for download on the website and should be presented, you know, to the customer at the time that you present the subcapacity attachment for any new subcap licenses.
And it's in the same place where you find the attachment in that area, so you can, when you show them the attachment, you can show them the letter also.
Okay, because in the presentation I now have in front of me, it goes to the agreement terms, so it doesn't go to the letter. But I'll visit the website to find it there.
Yeah, if you go to the subcapacity website that's linked there, the internal one, same one that I was telling people to use to get the charts, you'll find there's a link to the subcapacity attachments page, and you'll find those letters on that subcapacity attachment page.
Okay, I'll find it. Thanks.
Next, we'll go to Richard Delaney.
Yes, thanks. My question is for customers that have not had subcapacity offered to them in the past. I'm going to present this, and the first question I'm going to get is, we've been making them pay for full capacity all this time, as recently as just last year. They're on a newly supported platform, but they're going to say, is there going to be a reimbursement? Because there's going to be a significant drop in their license requirement based on your slide 3 with the blue and red charts.
Well, you know, every customer situation is unique. You know, we know that there are going to be some examples like you're describing. You know, we're not going to, you know, issue any credits in this situation. To the extent that customers have, you know, license to, you know, let's say, processors on a server that under subcap they might not need, I would imagine that the discount provided to the customer, you know, would have been higher than otherwise provided in a subcap environment, and I would strongly encourage you to consider, you know, that when you migrate them, if they're looking to convert to subcap, you know, i.e. the discount should come down significantly under those set of circumstances.
Hey, can I ask you how long subcap has been available on Z-Linux?
Since April of 2005.
Thank you.
April 19th, if you really care.
But when you get those unique customer situations, I would encourage you to ask for help. You know, send a note to the subcap ID, and let's see if we can help you with that and learn you know, through that discussion.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Sharon Brenner. Brennan?
Yes, thank you. Gentlemen, question on the conversion of license part numbers. Customer declares that these number of licenses, which were previous processor-based licenses or PBU-based licenses, are now declared as subcapacity licenses. Do we still have that requirement, or has that also been suspended?
We still have that requirement. So they need to go ahead and go through that conversion to get the right product part numbers. That protects them in the case of an audit, is the fundamental reason to do that. You want to make sure that they're in compliance with the terms so there's no issues should they be audited, and that's the right way to deal with that.
Okay. The second, I have a follow-on question. The installation of the IT CLM code, our license compliance manager code, has been at the customer's. Basically, we drop the code to them and ask them to install it and configure it and maintain it. Is there a support organization, or will there be a dedicated support organization which will help customers in whatever situation we find ourselves in the future to install the code?
I think it's the, you know, the traditional Tivoli support, you know, they're there to help do this. We have heard some cases where there have been problems in the past, and that's part of why we've worked so closely with the Tivoli team I don't think we had made our concerns and issues quite as aware to the Tivoli team as we should have, and they've really stepped up to it. In addition, they have their quick start services, which are available. The customer can buy those services that assist them doing it. So whichever route they take, there should be the, you know, the support available to the customer in that effort.
There's no support from the Tivoli field team on this because they're not getting any revenue for these licenses. So the customer is forced to call in an APAR or go back to the 1-800 IBM support to get any questions answered on their installation problems.
If you could send us a note, we'd certainly like to look into the details to understand it. You know, we are trying to iron out any of these problems we've heard about. So if you could let us know the specifics, we can dig underneath it and see if there are still additional issues that need to be addressed.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that will help us, you know, as we construct and relaunch, you know, at the end of this year, understand exactly what we need to have in place. So good comment.
Next, we'll go to Mark Gladding.
Yeah, hi, guys. I don't know if you can actually answer my query or whether you might be able to point me at somebody else. But there seem to be some anomalies with regards to which products subcap licensing is available on. And just as an example, you can buy a subcap license for Message Broker, but you can't buy a subcap license for Message Broker File Extender. I don't suppose this change will affect that. How do anomalies like that get addressed?
The way it normally works is that the product development team, the PDT, as they are working on it, the rules in software groups say that if they use PBUs, they need to offer a subcapacity version of it. Now, many of them have asked for exceptions because they may have a major new version coming out in the not-too-distant future, and they'd rather wait and do it with this major new version. So you would expect over time that you'll see pretty much the whole PBU portfolio get the function so that you would see it evolve not only from the message broker to the extender. However, you need to be aware there are also some products, and I don't believe the extender is part of them, but I'm not intimately familiar with that. There are some products which we don't ever intend to offer, something like a DB2 workgroup, which has very specific terms around it to limit its use. I don't personally ever see that being offered in a subcapacity mode. But also, in the meantime, if you have a product that you believe your customer needs to run in subcapacity, you can request through a special bid that capability. Can't commit that would be granted. I've seen a number of those that have been approved under a set of terms essentially that say we use a trust model until that product is supported by TLCM, and then it rolls under the standard Tivoli or the standard subcapacity terms and conditions.
Yeah, I would just add to what Roger just articulated that, in effect, the brands own the decision as to whether or not, MQ File Extender will be offered with a subcapacity part number. And so I would encourage you to, send a note with your ideas to the appropriate person in the brand. If you want to copy the subcap ID, then we'll start accumulating a list and work it from our end, frankly.
Okay, thanks very much.
Next, we'll go to Larry Krebs.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, I got a unique situation I need some help with. If we're going to do subcapacity in a clustered environment, it's going to be using micro-partitioning. And how do you license that? I mean, license a minimum per CPU, or I should say, CPU processor or the cluster, such as if they had 10 machines in the cluster and wanted to micro partitioning, and they wanted to CPU across these partitions, how do we license that?
Larry, we may need, again, go into some specific terms, so you may want to send a note to the subcap ID, but let me start, and Raj, certainly jump in if you want to enhance what I say at all. We'll give you some basics here, Larry. With the micro-partitioning, first of all, understand that, and for everyone else on the call, let me define a micro-partition. On the System P and the System I, there's some really terrific virtualization capabilities in those products through the virtualization engine allows you to create a partition that uses less than a single processor core. So it's using a fraction of a processor core. And today, with our subcapacity terms, the minimum size we will license to is a single processor core. However, you could potentially have multiple micro partitions, each using a product. Let's, for argument's sake, say it's WebSphere Commerce. You know, you could have some development partitions and some production partitions. And we add up the number of licenses we use in each of those partitions across each individual server in the cluster. So that if you had four micro partitions, each using half of a processor core, that would add up to a total of two processor cores for that server, and you would then need the appropriate number of licenses, since that's, I'm going to assume, a system P using micropartitioning, that would be 200 processor value units. You know, two processor cores times 100 processor value units per core. So on a per-server basis, you take a look at what is the maximum number of partitions. If it turns out to be a fraction, when you finish adding those up, you round up to the next whole number of processor cores, and that tells you how many licenses you need to have. So, Raj, is there anything you want to add on this sort of general call, and then we can fill in details with Larry?
Yeah, I mean, the key thing is, you know, Roger, I agree with everything that you've said, and it's done at a server level, right? So if you have multiple machines, you would do this for every server and then add up all the numbers for the server. So this rounding and the micro-partitioning, the counting is done at an individual server level.
Okay, so who could I get my answer? Who should I send my question out to?
You can send it to the subcap ID.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yep. Melanie, do we have any other questions?
Next, we'll go to Thomas Simonson.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you again for having this call. It's my understanding with the subcapacity that if a customer does not submit the report for the 9th day following the end of the quarter, that they are automatically going to be invoiced for the total usage of the box. In my duration at IBM, I have never seen that actually take place, which continues to lead to the perception that IBM software compliance is merely a paper tiger, that if they really want to go through all of these manual efforts, they could, but irrespective, they haven't been invoiced. Can you comment on that? Is that with the suspension of these terms, that 9-day period is obviously a moot point?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to that. Understand that one of the sort of basic value propositions that IBM has with customers is that we never want to turn around and jerk the rug out from underneath them and disrupt their production environment. We think it's very important that they can continue to operate their business, you know, without disrupting their normal business. That said, they do need to comply with our terms, and we have had communications with a number of customers who didn't report on time. And frankly, that's part of the reason we found out that there were individual situations where they were having problems installing TLCM for IBM software, or to figuring out which products were components of bundles or were standalone products. And so, you know, we tried to be relatively flexible here. As I said, you know, this offering's been out in the marketplace for 2 years, and we're trying to make sure that we evolve it and adapt it as we go. So we have been flexible with some customers so that we weren't appearing to be too onerous. But it is our intention. In fact, we have pulled the trigger on some customers to ask for more money, but that has not been across the board, again, because we want to take each individual's customer situation into account, and we don't want to ultimately have them coming back and accusing us, especially if it were being the press, that we were disrupting the normal course of their business.
I do, and I would echo the sentiments of an earlier caller that the keying of software would just be such a benefit because I've got a customer with 9,810 machines running across over 25,000 CPUs, and they're largely using x86 technology on Linux. So subcapacity and bundling and all of that, the manual effort required across that in and of itself would take 3 quarters. So compliance for them is something that they can choose to ignore.
Well, it's a major issue. Customers can never choose to ignore, from your accent, this may be somebody from the United States of America, where the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation takes place. You know, compliance is becoming a much more important issue for customers, not only within IT, but across all of their operations. But certainly software compliance is a component of that, and I think you will see that businesses as a whole pay more attention to compliance over time. And I think that's part of the reason that you're going to see this whole software asset management category of software, which the Tivoli Licensed Compliance Manager is one of the premier offerings in the marketplace today. You're seeing its growth expected to just explode because so many customers are dealing with a number of issues around compliance with not only IBM but with all of their software vendors and with their own applications, hardware, you know, it's all those pieces. So we certainly understand the complexity issue. As I said earlier in the call, that's one of the reasons we backed off, because customers like that are the ones that we're just finding it extraordinarily difficult to figure some of those things out. But I think long term, as the whole number of products in the software asset management category improve, this customer is going to find that it really is to their benefit to leverage the technology to help them manage and track it.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Vicki O'Brien.
Yeah, early in the call you made mention that IBM treats or has a different definition or treats multi-core chips differently than other software vendors. Can you explain how they treat it versus how we treat it?
Sure. Let me give you a little bit of history. And first, I would say we don't treat it differently. We treat it the way everyone in the industry used to treat it. If you go back in history, maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, most people, software vendors, licensed per server. And a server, and that was back in days when servers, you know, at most had two processor cores in it. We all converted to a per-processor license in the late 90s, early 2000s, as the servers started getting bigger and bigger. And when we made that conversion, we made it clear that we licensed to the processor core. And that was emphasized in 2001 when the very first dual-core chip in the marketplace was announced. That was the IBM Power 4. It was used in the what was then called the P series and the I series, now the System P and the System I. We made it very clear at the time that we licensed to the processor cores, and in fact, no one objected because that particular chip, the cores were significantly faster over the previous generation of single processor or single core chips, and by putting two cores on a chip, customers were getting between 2.5 and 3 times the performance improvement at a chip level. So they were clearly getting the value at the processor core, and continued to license that way, and everyone thought that was fine. We really didn't receive any objections at all. What really changed, and by the way, in the meantime, Sun announced a dual-core chip for their Spark, as did HP for their PA RISC. Those both were announced in 2004. But what really changed things was in April of 2005 when the first x86 dual-core chip, it happened to have been the Opteron from AMD, but Intel followed it not long after with the Xeon, they made a fundamentally different design decision than what had happened before. They were addressing a different set of problems, trying to minimize the heat produced off these chips and the amount of power that they took, which translates into heat at the other end. They actually slowed the processor cores down on that first dual-core chip over the previous single-core chips. And when they did that, people started taking a look around and say, hey, software price performance isn't improving. We saw that, as did most other middleware vendors. So Oracle, BEA, continued along with IBM to license to the processor core. And we solved that problem by announcing some exceptions to our licensing policies. One license for the two cores in the chip. But if you are a chip vendor, if you're AMD or Intel, you can't sell a single processor core on a dual-core chip. You can't cut that chip in half and have it work. So they redefined, they changed the definition of the term processor at that time to say it was at that chip level, or, in fact, AMD went as far as to say at the socket level. It's possible to have multiple chips on a module which plugs into a single socket. So it was really in April of 2005, just a couple days after we formally announced the subcap offering, that you began to see all this turmoil over what the definition of a processor is. So I want to emphasize that we have been consistent with the definition of a processor core as long as we've used, you know, licensing to the processor. We've used the definition of processor core, and it was really, you know, a charge led by Intel and AMD to change that definition in 2005. Microsoft's gone along with that. We've talked about this in great detail in the PBU education, the work that was done last July, and you would find that information still up on the PBU website, both internally and externally. And again, if you're not sure where their website is, off that same Passport Advantage homepage that we mentioned, I didn't look this morning to see exactly where it's fallen in the list, but you can get a link off that page that will take you to the PBU, or if you can't find it there, certainly send us a note to the SubCap ID, and we'll get that PBU page out to you. But there's a lot more detail on the history there. I kind of gave you the Cliff Notes version. A lot more history on the website that will help you talk to your customer about that situation.
But to net it out, are you saying that most other software vendors still license to the chip as opposed to us licensing to the core?
Most other middleware vendors. Most application software vendors license on a per-user basis.
Right. Okay, understand.
I'm sorry, to the processor core. Thanks, folks in the room caught me. We still license along with most middleware vendors to the processor core. Microsoft is really the only major middleware vendor who does not define it as a processor core. All the others pretty much define it as a processor core. And I'm looking, Sue Swanson brought up for me the PA homepage. And if you go to the news section, you're going to find the link to the PBU website about halfway down the list.
I understand how we do it. The thing is, customers have thrown at me, why can't you do it like everybody else does?
I think from the feedback we've been hearing, you wouldn't want us to do it, for instance, like Oracle does. Oracle has a much more complex environment where they use fractions, and then you have to use a weighting factor by the particular processor core technology. And, you know, we took a look at that approach and thought that that was just much more complex than converting to processor value units.
One quick answer, you know, could be if we were to license to let's say the chip, which by the way, you know, the definition is morphing to the socket, so there's plenty of waffling going on, you know, by Microsoft on this point and Intel, right? But what one point you might want to argue is if we were to license to, you know, four cores or eight cores in one chunk, i.e., you know, per chip or socket, the price would be higher, and not every customer, you know, wants to license to all four or eight cores worth of processor capacity, right? They want to be able to license for the portion of the, you know, chip or socket that they use, i.e., you know, the more granular licensing metric, which we have always been on, which is the core.
Yeah, and adding to that, I think you'll find, you know, just a few years out from here, as most customers have adopted virtualization technologies, they're going to be wanting to do exactly what Carlos was describing, you know, licensing to a subset of the cores on a particular chip or socket. And, in fact, we believe we are on the right path that will be the best alternative for them in the future. But it may not be as clear to all your customers today if they haven't adopted some of the more advanced virtualization features yet.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Christian Geertes.
Hello. My question has already been answered. In the meantime, it was a question regarding the message booker file extender.
Okay, great. I'm glad we answered it already. Melanie, any other questions?
We have one more question. We'll go to Brian Smith.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, my original question had been answered as well, so I'll just go into a quick comment that as coming from the Rational brand, I was part of that acquisition. We too had licensing mechanisms that made it very easy for our clients to stay compliant. And if we can provide an easy way for our clients in this market to maintain their compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley, we will have a competitive advantage. So I'm reemphasizing what was mentioned earlier about making this easier for our clients and, you know, if, you know, ideally providing a more automated mechanism for doing so.
Now, we appreciate the comment. We certainly understand what that would do for us. But as you know, sometimes getting software group to be able to turn on a dime is a pretty difficult task. So I wouldn't hold your breath, but we're certainly evaluating what the alternatives might be to accomplish that.
Thank you.
All right, and with that, unless another question's come in, Melanie?
We'll take a question from a follow-up question from Jennifer Holloway.
Well, it's really not a follow-up question, but a comment. I just don't like you to characterize it as turning on the dime, because we have been advocating this approach of this rational fellow just mentioned again. We've been advocating this for years, and I feel like I appreciate your at least accommodating us, but it's as if upper management does not get it, and somebody has got to take that message to the mountain and get them to realize the opportunity here. And so it's not turning on the dime. Let's move this ship gradually. And I appreciate your point earlier that, you know, we have then all this legacy software that we would have to deal with. At least let's move in that direction. We need to set a strategy. We need to make that change. And so I think it would yield huge benefits, but if we continue to keep our head in the sand, we will never make progress on this.
Well, so I don't. Let me try this one. I don't think we have our heads in the sand, right? I think that the strategy is to simplify the Tivoli License Compliance Manager tool so that our customers are able to identify the middleware on their servers and calculate how many licenses and you know, PBUs.
But forgive me, that is not what I'm asking. I'm not asking to put it in Tivoli License Manager. I'm asking, like the rational guy just did, put it back into the base products.
Now, we do understand the problem, and when I characterized it as turning on a dime, I didn't mean to be, you know, too short or too sort of writing it off. There, we understand the value proposition that would have and why that's attractive, but in fact there's a lot of other issues that result from that that may not be as clear to you, and one of the things we want to make sure is that we don't cause more problems downstream.
Yeah, this is Sue Swanson. Let me jump in. This is an issue which we evaluate and reevaluate many times, I don't think it's totally appropriate on this call to get into what you're describing from the rational point of view. But what we need to do is communicate in a better fashion what the software group strategy is in this regard and why, and we'll try and get around to doing that. This was that what we're trying to do right here is specifically address the subcap compliance. I understand the issue with rational. I've been associated with it over time, and I know what people would like us to do in the future, and we need to be more articulate on what we're doing and what we can't do.
Please understand that we're just using rational as an example. I'm not saying offer it only in the rational portfolio. I'm saying that software group from distributed to mainframe should have those.
I totally understand what you're saying. I really do. I mean, I've been in and around this issue for many years. So I really totally understand. I don't think we've obviously communicated well to the field what we're thinking.
So what I'm going to commit to you, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking about some of the virtualization technologies, that we're going to have follow-on education to describe those in more detail. As part of that process, we will ensure that we describe this and describe why our strategy is what it is in the coming months. So we really do hear you, Jennifer, and we'll try to get a better set of messages out there for you so you can understand what the strategy is and why.
Thank you.
Melanie, any last-minute questioners?
We do have a question from Alvin Chan.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, Alvin, we can.
So I just want to make a comment. In addition to the hardware cost, implementation cost, there's also the ongoing hosting costs to support the IBM Tivoli Compliance Manager. And so it's making our product really not competitive to other vendors such as Oracle, which I believe don't have this type of licensing monitoring tool that customers have to go and implement. So my question to you is, are we looking at providing maybe a free hosting services where the customer doesn't have to even install this on?
I'd like to make two comments on that, Alvin. Mm-hmm. First of all, yeah, Oracle doesn't have a compliance tool, but Oracle does not have a standard subcapacity licensing offering either. Their standard terms would be full capacity and full capacity only, which brings me to the second point. You know, we think that there's a really strong benefit to the customer in installing subcapacity, which is they can reduce their software bill because they don't need to have licenses for all the processor cores. Now, you can pay for that in a couple different ways, and one, of course, is the monetary value, whether it's, you know, a dollar or a euro or a yen or whatever the particular currency, the local currency happens to be that they pay for that license in. But part of that is also the fact that to help run that, they also need to have a way to be sure that they're in compliance. And the Tivoli License Compliance Manager is a tool that lets them do that. So it really enhances their ability to ensure that they're in compliance. And, just think of it as, you know, it's one of those things you pay for to get the enormous benefits of subcapacity licensing.
My understanding is Oracle do have similar type of capacity, like you can also license it for core or some sort of container.
Yeah, they do have a subcap offering, they distinguish between hard and soft partitioning. You know, they also have an audit approach, you know, which we believe if we combine, you know, with a tool that helps customers identify the license requirements that they need, right? So, i.e., a tool that helps them be prepared for an audit, that's a better position to be in than where Oracle leaves you. So look, we are suspending the terms which say, you know, you must use this tool, you must use the LMS entitlement process, you must report to us quarterly, and we are crafting an easier process requirements. We will be, you know, communicating, you know, what exactly those new requirements are later this year. But we do have the customer in mind and your comments in mind as we go to formulate these new terms. We do think if we wind up in a situation where we have an easy to use tool that customers can use to make sure that they're in compliance, then when an audit does roll around, they're in a much better situation than the Oracle customer would be in with no tool. That's the strategy.
All right, and I know at this point we've run way over, and particularly for those of you in Europe, we're really moving into your evening, and we apologize for that. Should there be any additional questions or ones you think of, please do send them into the subcap ID listed on page 11. But again, we'd like to thank you all for participating. For those of you who have customers with subcap licenses today, please do make sure that they understand that these terms have been suspended, and you get the materials, as we mentioned, off of the subcapacity website that is linked to here in the presentation. So again, thank you for participating, and we look forward to speaking to you in a few months with the next announcement in the evolution of our subcapacity offering. Thank you very much.
That does conclude today's teleconference. We'd like to thank you all for your participation. Have a wonderful afternoon.